Welcome back to Your Ag Empire, where we roll up our sleeves, dig in the dirt, and uncover the secret to success in the world of agriculture. I'm your host, Jonathan Harrelson, a Texas farmer and rancher, farm risk consultant, and commodity coach. New episodes drop on Wednesdays on Spotify, Apple, and YouTube, and we'd be honored to have you as a subscriber. Today, we are honored to host Will Clay, a seasoned senior IoT solutions architect from Perkins, Oklahoma. With a decade of experience, Will's expertise in designing tailor-made IoT hardware for the utility industry is unparalleled. In this episode, Will and I explore the transformative impact of IoT solutions in agriculture. We discuss upcoming projects, unexpected applications in farming, and how IoT contributes to improving animal welfare. Brace yourselves for a fascinating glimpse into Will's groundbreaking project, the creation of a turbine tractor. Stay tuned for a concise yet insightful conversation on the practical advancements that IoT brings to agriculture. This is your Ag Empire, where innovation meets the fields. Joining us on Your Ag Empire is Will Clay. Welcome to the show, Will. To a lot of people, I mean, mainly on TikTok, you're the guy behind the mini pivot and a lot of other viral content. I mean, who are you in real life?
So in real life, I am a senior IoT solutions architect with an innovative energy management company based out of McKinney, Texas. But I spend my time outside of work tinkering with electronics, and I spend my real time tinkering with electronics.
Awesome. That IoT, that's kind of an interesting, what exactly is IoT? Can you give us some kind of a description?
Yeah, so IoT is Internet of Things. It's anything that can be connected wirelessly or wired to the internet, essentially. So your thermostats in your house is a form of IoT. A sensor that you might put in the driveway to let somebody know that there's somebody coming up your driveway, that's a form of IoT. So it's just it's putting a real world information reporting device on something that typically would not have it to make your life easier.
Gotcha. Okay. So I mean, this has come natural. We were talking earlier, and our podcast producer, Brooke, we were talking about some videos, and she showed me this, and lo and behold, it ended up being you, the man behind the camera. And so I thought it was kind of interesting that we had that connection there. And IoT, it sounds like a really technical type. And looking at your videos and seeing and realizing what you do in real life, it all kind of makes sense now. Have you always been a tinkerer?
I have, as long as I can remember. In fact, I remember specifically we were, I don't know how old I was, but I remember I would always take stuff apart. So I remember we got a new microwave one time, and I wanted to take apart this microwave and see what all was in it, or see if there was anything in there that I could use to play with for building something else at the time. And I remember we were traveling to Indiana, and we were flying. And I think this was around 2002 or 2003. So it was still a sensitive time for security at the airport. And I had like all of the electronic parts of the microwave in my backpack that I had packed to take with me, and was trying to take all that stuff through security. And that's when my mom found out that they were pretty sensitive about that stuff at the time. But no, it's been forever back. I mean, I've just always been involved with it in some way, and it never, like, not sure where it started, because I wouldn't say like it started with anybody directly. It just kind of happened. I was just interested in the way things worked.
That's kind of neat. My brother is a lot like you, and even as an adult near 40 years old, he still is a tinkerer. We kind of laugh about him slipping off into the shop, and you know, he's always creating something. And so it's been really fun to kind of watch that evolve over the years. And it kind of makes sense with his job too. Well, we're going to tie this back, you know, with Empire Ag. I mean, we kind of focus on farming and ranching, and I know you've got a farming and ranching background. And so a lot of our listeners, they may be wondering, how in the world would IoT fit back into agriculture? Can you share some examples of how IoT solutions have been applied in the ag sector to enhance efficiency or, you know, address any specific challenges for farmers and ranchers?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'd say the biggest thing is just time efficiency. So things that you have to do every day or every other day that takes time out of your day that could be automated. One of those things would be feed bin, like creep feeder monitoring. So if you had a creep feeder that you deployed out in the field once a week, once every 3 days or whatever, it just depends on your operation, that you might have to go out and check the level of the feed in that. And then determine, like, if you store feed on site, do you need to take feedback out there, fill up feeder back up, or do you order it when you need it? And if you order it, what's the lead time look like? So one of the things that I've done is we have sensors that can go on these creep feeders and monitor the level of feed inside of that feeder. And then we can look at the usage rate over time and see, okay, so we're using 5% of the capacity every day. We're at 20%. So we have roughly 4 days remaining to zero. Let's go ahead and reorder or whatever that looks like. And so those are some of the sensors that I've deployed.
That's cool. Yeah. How do you see IoT technologies contributing to sustainable and precision farming practices?
Yeah. So in precision farming, weather stations and irrigation monitoring is one of the biggest things. So there's a lot of systems out there, and there's a lot of irrigation companies who support this equipment right now. Valley, I believe, has some equipment that works with their irrigation units. And precision farming, I think the biggest thing is just soil moisture in irrigation applications. So in real time, adjusting the drive rate of your irrigation unit based off of what the unit is putting down and what the soil moisture is like in the conditions that it's running. So if you're already pretty wet in the soil in a certain area, speed to pivot up to get past that into a drier area and then slow it back down to increase your rate. So there's things like that. And a lot of these devices are all battery powered and wireless devices that you could just deploy in the field. And they'll sit out there and run for weeks or months or even years at a time.
So, I mean, this is going to help, you know, make data-driven decisions, to kind of optimize the time. I mean, for us to go drive around and look at every farm, you know, right then and there, it's so time consuming. We can make that decision right then and there.
Absolutely.
This is some good stuff for a lot of our listeners. You've got kids that are looking for, tech type careers and things that you can kind of do. I mean, it seems like the sky's the limit on this thing.
Yeah. In fact, one of the biggest devices that's been very successful and it really hasn't existed up until recently. I've been toying with this device since 2015. And I've made several different iterations and versions of it. Now there's commercial versions of it out there just because I wasn't necessarily about trying to build a product and deploy to tens of thousands of people. I was trying to build a product that we could use internally in our own operations. Sure. It's automatic water and stock tank monitoring. So we have stock tanks that are in the middle of fields that are several miles away from the house. And these tanks are filled up, whether it be by windmill or typically solar nowadays, so solar well pumps. And if that solar well pump goes down, you know, you have to drive out there and look at that tank, you know, every day or every other day, depending on the size of the tank and how many head you have on that tank. So one of the things that I did is developed a device. It's a little cellular device that clips on the side of the tank and monitors the water level of the tank. Mm-hmm. And it will let you know if that water level drops below a certain threshold or what that might be. And then that kind of evolved into the automatic water world. So an automatic water has its whole own set of issues that you have to deal with.
Sure.
Especially so if you're trying to water 100 head off of a couple of automatic waterers, you know, an automatic water is not like a stock tank where it can store several hundred gallons as a reservoir. It only holds maybe 10 or 15 or 20 gallons of water in it. And so mm-hmm. if the float valve breaks or your water supply gets cut off somehow, you know, there's no reserve. Like that, mm-hmm. that water's gone basically immediately. And then, you know, you might go all day or maybe 2 days before you go out and physically check that water and realize that your cows haven't had water. And how long have they not had water?
Sure.
So monitoring those have been, I think, the bigger impact. That and freezing, monitoring whether or not those devices are froze. So I monitor that as well with a temperature sensor. So we can detect icing, or if it's geothermally heated, mm-hmm. you can see that. Typically, you don't have an issue with those. But if you have an electronically heated, did a breaker trip somewhere that might be feeding the heater in that water? Mm-hmm. And if it did, you might like to know about that. So
that's pretty neat. I mean, that's a great application. I know we down here in Texas, we just went through a drought this summer, and you know, we were having to move cattle around, just same situation. We'd run out of water at this place. And so, you know, you'd be out there, you might not go to that place the next day, and you know, it might be 2 days before you get back over there. And then all of a sudden you look back and there's no water. Yeah. And, that would be huge for us. I know, technology, it's crazy what's kind of coming. So let's move into the innovation side of things. So as a resident tinkerer and creative mind, can you share a project or an idea that you've worked on, which showcases innovative thinking, in the context of agriculture or IoT, anything that's, you know, kind of up and coming, new outside of what we just talked about?
Yep. So, I've recently been getting involved with, more of the solar water pump operation. Mm-hmm. So I've got a line of pumps that I'm working on right now that, they're solar water pumps that you can deploy in the field. There's several other companies out there, but none of them offer any sort of reporting. So sure. You can go buy these pumps and deploy them. And if you don't go check on that thing every day, like you don't know if there's an issue. In fact, I can't tell you how many times I've been called to go work on other pumps for mm-hmm. other people, for issues that they can't resolve. And usually their support just tells them, take it, pull it out of the well and send it to us, and we'll send you a new one later. Like that's not really an option in a lot of cases when that's your water source for your livestock. We've got this new pump module that has built-in IoT into it and reports back all the information about this pump device. So the solar information, how many minutes has it ran that day, what's the level of the water tank, is it frozen, like can we predict ice? If there is ice and we're using a float, mm-hmm. To detect it. So that's a whole another issue is the up north where, or anywhere you have to deal with icing is like, how does a float function in a stock tank when there's ice? Because it doesn't. Mm-hmm. So what we're playing with a few different ideas there, but breaking ice just is not fun in general. So what we've done actually with this device is we'll detect when the sun comes up. There's no batteries, first of all. So this thing, like it's not storing information in any way by batteries. When the sun comes up, it reads the temperature of the water and the level of the water. As soon as it gets enough power to do that, if it detects that the water level we think is full, mm-hmm. but the temperature is frozen. So we can assume there's an ice skim across the top of that tank. But we don't know if somebody busted a hole in it, if the cows have reached their head through there and drank out the bottom, and now there's a shelf of ice mm-hmm. that is tricking the well into thinking it's full. So if it's frozen and the sensor thinks there might be ice present, it'll go ahead and run the pump for 10 minutes, even though it knows the tank is likely full, and it's going to be pumping that, you know, 60 degree groundwater back onto the top of the tank to melt a hole in the ice, thaw out the sensors, and then like there's no having to deal with breaking ice. So, you know, it's the nice warm water is just burning a hole in the ice for you. So that's something that we're working on right now quite a bit.
I know a couple of my producers up in North Dakota would like something like that.
yeah, it's a great deal. I mean, there's so many people that are converting to solar wells nowadays. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's mm-hmm. a lot of windmills. They're still using the structure to mount a couple solar panels to. but sure. they're basically maintenance free. I mean, there's a once every 3 years, you might have to change out the little worm screw, which these pumps are field serviceable, which is great. Mm-hmm. So you can take the parts out with you. And with literally just an Allen wrench and a Phillips screwdriver, you can overhaul this pump and then stick it back down in the well and be done in an hour. So,
you know, honestly, we on our ranch in North Texas, we've had a solar pump, I think, coming on nearly 22 years, give or take. Yep. The first one lasted 16 or 18 years. Dad just changed it out maybe a year or two ago. Whenever you changed that one out, but definitely, it was really trouble free for us. I think it's huge, especially in these vast, really underdeveloped areas in the Central Plains where most of our livestock are running. We're not sitting with all this big infrastructure to run power to.
Exactly. And power is not cheap to run anymore. I mean, it's expensive.
It's huge. I think that's a great, great innovation. So in your experience, I mean, how do, you know, farmers and ranchers typically respond to or adopt these new technologies? And I mean, what factors contribute to the successful integration of some of this stuff?
Yeah. So I've worked with people on both ends of the spectrum in the ag space. So there's people out there that I've worked with that don't even have a smartphone, but they just want to get a text message when there's an issue, and that's perfect for them. And that works great. It depends around your lifestyle and your operations. Mm-hmm. You know, there's people that are still drive 1960s models equipment, and that's great. That's what you do. That's awesome. And then there's people who only own equipment that's no more than 3 years old. Sure. And you just have to find that spot. But that's the advantage with a lot of this equipment is it doesn't have to be the latest and greatest thing. It's just as long as it provides the information that you need and does what you want it to do. We've done some freezer monitoring for a lot of people monitoring their deep freezes for meat storage. Mm-hmm. So that's something. And then detecting if their freezer unit has gone down, that way they can go out and work on that. And that's just a text message based system. I mean, there's an app that you can log into and see some chart and information. But other than that, they just get a text message if their temperature goes above a certain threshold. And in other applications, you know, you might do advanced reporting and potentially pre-order like feed for you, like I was mentioning earlier. This is, hey, you're getting low on this particular product. We can go ahead and set up and send an email to a specific supplier to reorder that for you. There's a bunch of different things out there that can be done, and it can all be customized most of the time and whatever way you want.
Do you see, I mean, is age-wise, the adoption of some of this stuff, do you feel like the 65 to 75 year old rancher, you know, in Central Oklahoma, are they going to adopt this readily, or have you seen kind of a little pushback? Like,
actually had better success so far with the older generation, to be honest. It's pretty surprising. So it's not that the younger guys aren't into it, because they are 100%. They're in it. But it doesn't take much to, once you can show that efficiency to them and that it's not extremely complicated, because a lot of those guys come in thinking that it's, you know, this stuff's way over their head. It's way too complicated.
Sure.
It's not like there are things about it, yes, that can be complicated, but it shouldn't be. And that's my goal whenever I'm working on a lot of this stuff, is to make it as simple as possible. Like, get rid of these steps if it can just make this one step better or something.
Absolutely. So
there's a lot of things there. But yeah, I mean, we just installed a well pump to a rancher in North Oklahoma, and he's up there and he loves it. He's all over it. He's all of his neighbors are stopping by and asking about him and wanting them now. So it's a great deal.
Cool. Well, let's shift gears into the out of the box thinking. How can creative thinking and out of the box solutions address common challenges faced by farmers and ranchers? And, you know, especially in a rapidly evolving technological landscape. I mean, we've talked a little bit about ranching. Do you see anything for like the row crop producers that's kind of coming down the, you know, down the pike that they might be able to benefit from?
Yeah, there is. And that kind of falls back a little bit, I think, on that irrigation stuff that we talked about in weather stations. Uh-huh. So installing weather stations in your fields and knowing the exact parameters of that field that you're about to work in. Same thing with pesticide application. Weather stations provide a lot of wind data, which can help you determine, like, as the day goes on, do you change? Maybe you go over to this area and spray it first because the wind conditions are better, or what does that look like? But a lot of it is irrigation. I mean, the majority of it is irrigation for any type of farming. That's the biggest thing you can do. A lot of the equipment nowadays, you know, they've got so much smart precision equipment built into them. I mean, there's sprayers now that will not spray unless they see a weed, and they'll just spray that weed that they see.
Sure.
And there's some advanced stuff. And then a lot of that data can be exported as well. So I'll give you an example, actually. And I'd say this is pretty out of box, because this was before a lot of the drone stuff existed. Mm-hmm. See, I did this stuff back in 2010. And so we deal with red ants a lot where we're mm-hmm. at. And whether it's pasture or it's crop ground, I mean, just, you're going to deal with these things, and they're everywhere, at least here and where we're at in Oklahoma. And so these red ants, they would consume, you know, a good probably 10, 15 foot radius circle around their hill. I mean, it's just bare dirt. So what I would do is I would fly a drone and over this property with an NDVI camera, which is just, it's a multispectral camera that's showing vegetation growth. And it would show up, we do a map, like an ortho map. So the drone flies itself. You just set it up and tell it to, here's the grid that I want you to fly in. And it goes and builds out this ortho map. Mm-hmm. And then it exports that as an image. And then, so I wrote a Python script that would run on my computer that would take that image. It would scan across this image, every line by line, pixel by pixel. And it would look for these circles, crop circles, I would say. There's nothing there. It's just bare circles. Mm-hmm. It would look for these circles. Every time it would find one, it would place a waypoint right in the center of that circle. And then it'd just move on all the way down through until it was done with that image. And there might be 10 circles in it. There might be 100 circles in it, just depended on how many of these anthills there were. It would spit it back with all those waypoints overlaid on top of that image, so I could look at it and visually see, okay, this was a piece of equipment sitting there. So it's not really,
that one's not
a circle. Yeah. So ignore that, or ignore this one, or this one, it just skipped this one, but I can visually see it. So I'll click that. So then now I've got waypoints of where all of these circles are. And then I would load these into the drone and do a mission plan. And I, at the time, I didn't have my aerial applicator's license. So I'm trying to figure out, like, how can I spray these with a drone without getting in trouble? So, like, I'm looking for things that, like, you can drop on an anthill and kill ants, but it's not considered a pesticide. And aspartame, which is an artificial sweetener, is the best thing to come up with. And it's like, it kills ants pretty good. So I built this hopper that hangs on the bottom of a drone and bought like a 10 pound bag of aspartame. This artificial, basically sweet and low is what it is.
Sure.
And this drone would take off. It would fly over every one of these spots, and it would dispense about a cup of aspartame on each one of these anthills. And so I repeated that for a couple of weeks, and it eliminated every single one of those anthills doing that.
Wow.
And now there's equipment out there that you can buy off the shelf that does the same stuff.
Sure. Sure.
But yeah.
Wow. What advice do you have for individuals that, you know, are in the ag industry, but they're looking to embrace, you know, more innovative and creative mindsets in their operation? Like, is there a community where IoT and agriculture meet, where they could find out more about things that are coming? How do you know what all the stuff that's evolving technology wise?
The biggest way to stay on top of that, in my opinion, is, well, one, I just find Facebook groups. And most of the time, though, there's nothing that's specific ag and IoT.
Yep.
But the biggest advantage, I go every year, is to farm shows. So The best farm show that I have found that really shows you this is the National Farm Machinery Show in Louisville, Kentucky. And it's an amazing show to go to, and you'll see all kinds of the latest technology. There's drone equipment there. There's all kinds of precision farming equipment there. There's weather stations. There's a lot of different IoT moving into that. I've gone every year since 2008 or so, and here recently, it's getting better and better, and it's always cutting edge stuff. So it's not like a lot of the farm shows you go to around here that is just dealerships that's there to sell their equipment. Don't get me wrong, that's what they're doing here. It's all just people trying to sell equipment, but it's not just dealerships. Like, it's technology companies that are attending,
showcasing the new and upcoming stuff.
That's the best way to stay on top of it, for sure.
Do you think, like, if somebody's wanting to invest, in any of these companies, are they larger companies that are non-ag focused, or that have kind of branched into the ag based sector, or are we looking at some companies that are straight ag from day one that they could kind of look into?
Yeah, so there's both. I think that, and that's a hard decision, because you've got the companies who have the people and the mindset of a tech company who mm-hmm. are trying to work in the ag space. And sure. Like, what information and what knowledge do they have of the ag space? You know, it all depends on who do they hire and what information do they have internally to make sure that they're not just building a product that they think is going to work in the ag space and it's completely not feasible. And then you've got the other way around, where you have these old ag companies who have been around for sometimes 50 to 100 years, and now they're trying to integrate IoT into smart equipment into their products or their ag space.
Yep.
And I've seen some examples of that are terrible, like that you guys just need to step back and do what you were doing, because you're not doing a very good job at it. And a lot of times that ruins the experience too, because you'll go and I'm not going to call any brands out, but you'll go to the specific brand who makes a fence charger, for example, mm-hmm. and they're like, well, now we have this remote reporting on our fence charger that will tell you every time there's a short on your fence or something. And the intuitiveness of the app and getting it connected to the internet is terrible. Like, I'm pretty well technologically like capable of doing that stuff, and it was an awful process. And I could imagine somebody who's not very like in tune with that having a really hard time. And that just kind of,
they're like, screw this. We don't want to go that. Just give me the old simple one and we'll go down. Yeah,
exactly. That's exactly what happens. And then it makes that product look bad. And then it starts to make that company look bad. And
absolutely.
And it's a hard thing to deal with. I mean, having a company who was born in ag and having technology is hard to do, but sure. There's big companies obviously that can swing that, like John Deere, for example. I mean, you know, they've yeah. been in the space forever, but they've also been doing technology in other areas for a long time. So they've got the people internally and they're just a massive company and they got a lot of resources. But a lot of these smaller companies that they might try to outsource the technology part of it to a firm, mm-hmm. and there's not good communication between the two companies, and it's just makes for a really poor product experience.
And you look back, like companies like John Deere, I mean, they've got the capital to invest what they need to, and they've got that internal communication where they truly know what they're trying to achieve. I could totally see that the synergies between two separate companies that are trying to achieve a goal, like whoever's the visionary in that sometimes can not properly get that across. And
exactly.
It's just, it's hard to work together on some of those projects like that. I could see that being tough.
There's been several examples like that. And there's been some great examples from companies that are like located in Southern California. And you could mm-hmm. tell that, like, just doing my research, that these guys have never been in the ag space before, but they've done a really good job at their research and figured it out. But there's some crucial steps that they miss.
Sure.
That a person who would have been involved in agriculture, like, you're providing me with this data point, but I don't care about that data point. That data point means nothing to me. And you're just making things confusing by providing data that doesn't exist. But yeah, it's finding that mix, that good mix. And it all comes down to the company and who they hire, I think. I mean, they can hire the greatest engineers in the world, but they also need to have the guy who's been in the field working on this stuff his whole life, telling him this makes sense, this doesn't make sense.
Sure. Absolutely. It feels like a good time to hear from our sponsor, who's making this podcast possible. From investigative bookkeeping, like tracking down that one or 19 transactions that just doesn't make sense, to establishing charts of account that work for your business, to reconciliations, the PharmaCyst team believes good business begins with accurate and complete financials. They roll up their sleeves and dig into your financials so that your business grows and thrives. You can harvest the profits of your hard work with a clear picture of your operations financial position. To learn more about PharmaCyst, visit youragempire.com. Integration of IoT and agriculture. Can you discuss the potential impact of IoT on livestock management and how it can improve animal welfare? We've talked about, you know, with watering and some of that in our first segment, but you know, like, is there anything out there right now as far as animal welfare goes?
Yep, there's a few things that I've worked with. There's companies out there who I've helped actually get some of this stuff going. So there's a few different devices here I'll talk about. So one of them is just animal tracking in mm-hmm. general. So every time you run a cow through the chute, so the old way of doing things and still the current way of doing things is reading an ear tag number and writing it down on a spreadsheet or whatever it is that you might be doing to it. Mm-hmm. So RFID ear tags are very common. They're required on a lot of registered animals now, but anybody can use an RFID ear tag. You can buy these things off the shelf now. And there's readers and there's software out there who will help manage and take care of tracking all that stuff for you. So for example, there's a company that I was working with who's has these readers that will install in your alleyway, in your chute. Mm-hmm. And so if you have a scale set up before your chute, or if it's in your chute, or depending on your configuration, you can set it up. But so as your cow walks through and is staged in the scale, there's a reader right there that will read the ear tag of that cow and then go ahead and save that weight to that cow's file without you having to do anything.
Gotcha.
That cow moves up into the chute. You're doing your work to it. You're whatever it is you might be doing, vaccinations or whatever. It's being logged, everything that you're doing to it, to that particular cow's number. So there's no mishap of accidentally writing down the wrong number or thinking in your head, like, oh, I'll just do these five cows. I'll remember the numbers and I'll go write them down. And then you always forget which one of those numbers it might have been, or you're always thinking in the back of your head, did that cow go through there or did I skip it or what happened? It's all digitally logged in real time without you having to do anything. So that's one of the things. The other two things are more of a direct on animal type sensor. One of them is actually in animal. It's a bolus. It's basically a Bluetooth BLE bolus. Mm-hmm. And these Bluetooth devices, it's a common thing that's used in a lot of IoT nowadays. AirTag, it's basically think of it like an AirTag. So an AirTag is a Bluetooth device with a little battery in it. It's a very Bluetooth low energy, specifically BLE. This old bolus has a BLE chip in it. It has a battery and it has a thermistor and a couple other little sensors. So you feed this cow this bolus. It's just a large pill, and it goes and settles into one of their stomachs, and it's reporting back temperature. And these guys have been able to figure out the temperature that a cow, like you can detect ovulation, what their cycles are, all based off of just internal body temperatures. And so this bolus sits down there, it's collecting this data. And then every time they put the reader, typically by like the stock tank or an automatic water, somewhere that cow goes often mm-hmm. to be detected. and that cow walks over there, that information, it's close enough to that reader, it's offloaded. And then now you can look at that and say, okay, here's the particular date and cycle that this cow is on, and see that information. Wow. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I've seen some just some grumblings about it. I haven't seen any widespread usage yet, you know, on any of the ranches that I work with. But it's been kind of neat to think about that, because I mean, you know, AI, ET, when you're sitting here setting cows up, and you know, you want those percentages as high. You want the best shot you can to get that cow pregnant. And
yep.
And
yeah, and there's another device I'm working on right now. I've been tinkering with it a little bit. It's been done in the past. There's patents on it, and those patents have expired. I don't know why, if the technology just wasn't there at the time, because it's been quite a while ago. I know the technology is there now, because I've looked at this in depth and I know I can do it.
Yeah.
But there's another device out there that I'm working on right now, which I won't say too much about, but it'll make tracking that stuff easy. And very reusable. So those boluses obviously are single use. This is a device that's reusable. So, and I'm pretty excited about that. And it'll work the same way as the other one, pretty much. So my range will be quite higher. You could actually, I could read these devices from line of sight a mile away.
Oh, wow.
So you just put one antenna up near your barn or wherever it might be. You could even put this antenna mobily on your truck. So whenever you go out to these pastures to feed, you're
start picking it up.
Yeah. But, and then I have, there's solar versions of the sensor too, of the reader. But, and then the other last, I think device or sensor, that kind of fits this category is, it goes back on the RFID side of things and the automatic water side of things. Mm-hmm. So the automatic water sensor that we have, it can support other peripheral inputs like a flow sensor, to monitor how much flow is going in, but it can also support an RFID reader as well. Sure. So these, you can install an RFID reader at an automatic water. And if that's their only source of water, and you know, I have these 30 cows that are in this pasture and this is the only place they can get water, then let's start tracking every time they get water. Mm-hmm. And if you see, hey, cow 22 hasn't been up here in, you know, it hasn't been up here in 12 hours or 14 hours or whatever might be alarming, that's out of that cow's nature. And so what it'll do is it'll track, hey, how often this cow comes up, and you can kind of get a trend line of that cow's activity at that water. And then if you see a deviance from that trend line, like, it hasn't shown up, it's been 4 extra hours, like, send a notification.
Something's going on.
That something's going on. That cow is not doing what it typically does. And then you could go check on it. And it, you know, whether it's stuck or hurt or laying down and sick, you never know. Like, but yeah, that's one of the things too.
That's crazy. Do you find it? So for you, I mean, you've got a mind for this kind of stuff. Like, this is, I mean, obviously, like, you follow you on social media, look at everything that you've kind of done, like, this is you. Do you find it hard to shift, like, some of your creations into the business side of things, like, to where you could scale? And, you know, I mean, Will Clay's got lots of good ideas. Can we make Will Clay rich, you know?
Yeah. So I've had people come at me wanting to take these things to market, and I want to, but it's just like, I live a very busy life. Sure. So for me to take those things to market. So there's some people that I'm working with right now, that are taking care of a lot of that stuff for me. So there's a group of people that I'm working with that's actually helping with that. And where things are looking really good in that direction. So there's
that's what I was curious if it's, you know, it seems like a lot of folks that are kind of, their strength is in that creativity side of it, that, you know, to bridge that gap into the business and scalability. And a lot of times they suffer from that because, I mean, honestly, like, what they enjoy is creating this new technology, working on it, and making it better. I mean, that's what your passion is. It's not selling anything, really.
Building it, the engineering, the testing. I love that part. That's my favorite part.
Sure.
I don't love the paperwork tied behind making something like legal, dealing with selling it, dealing with procuring it, like assembly and production. Like I can get into that space, but that's a full-time job by itself.
Oh yeah.
100%. Ordering, and just keeping people lined up to make sure things are being in the right place at the right time. Mm-hmm. And that, cause so there's parts that I've had, typically everything I've built in house. But there's like some little like circuit boards and things like that, that are very intricate and require a machine to like place the components on the circuit boards. And in the US it's very expensive. I can get it done in China, typically much cheaper, but I try to do as much as I can, obviously, in the US, but they'll charge you an arm and a leg if like you send them the job and there's a certain component that they're supposed to have that's not there on time. And then so they'll charge you multiple setup fees or something. So making sure everything, everybody's schedules line up is hard. And then just logistics in general, because that's one of the other things. Logistics is a killer. I mean, you can come up with a device and say, here's a device. I think I'm going to sell this for $110 because it only cost me $40 to make or something. Mm-hmm. But then, like, who pays shipping? And you're paying shipping several times. It's not just once. It's not when it leaves the warehouse and goes to the end consumer. Like, all the components you're paying to get shipped to you. Mm-hmm. Then you're paying to get things shipped maybe from one factory to another to get assembled or something. And, like, there's a bunch of numbers in there that you never think about that and that's why a lot of things cost so much. It's shipping and certifications are the killer right there.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons some of the best inventions ever never make it to market. You know, the idea was wonderful, but they get bogged down into this aspect of it, and we never get to see it. You know.
Yeah. I've come up with some really great things that I know would do awesome, mm-hmm. but it's just out of price range too.
Like, sure.
I know I could build it for this. Even if I don't make a profit off of it, it's just nobody's going to buy it because it's too expensive. But
sure.
And that's just waiting on technology to change and the things to come down. And it's still kind of a hard time. Electronics was terrible.
Do you see that? Like where you'll kind of have an idea, you create something, but you're kind of ahead of the market, basically. Like, you know, 10 years later, you're like, oh, this is so much easier now.
It is. And I'll forget about it. And I'll go to a farm show and I'll literally see it exactly what I made 10 years ago on a shelf somewhere. And I'm like, dang it. That's the other thing. Like, I wish I just had $1 million to spend on patent attorneys because
sure,
I've got a lot of patents, but I don't want to spend the money to patent on things.
Exactly.
And I'm also not out there to just own things. Like I give away a lot of stuff too. Like I've given away so many ideas, and I do it because I want things to move forward. I want things to advance. Like there's companies that I've been helping do, like build a product, for example. There's some other companies out there that I've worked with to help them build their product. And I've given them some very great like designs that just made their product 10 times better.
Yeah.
You know, like I was just paid hourly for that work, but you know, that was a really amazing design, and you know, they went and patented it, and that's fine. Cause I was perfectly fine with that. But like that's just a hard one to be in, but.
Well, what our listeners are probably not aware of, I mean, you do have an ag background. I mean, you grew up farming and ranching, and that's another passion that you have. Tell us about Clay Ranch.
Yeah, so Clay Ranch is my dad, Bobby Clay, and Christine Clay. They run that full time, so they do a lot of. I couldn't tell you what all they do out there now. Every time I go out there, they've got something going on with the animals. So it's a AI operation, and so they do egg collection from cattle. They'll do embryo transplants, a lot of donor and recip operations. So there could vary between You never know. There might be 200 cows on the place, or there might be 500 cows or 600 cows on the place. And this stuff just changes and fluctuates every day. I spend my time there ever since I was little, trying to find ways to optimize things, even if they made it worse. Uh-huh. And I thought it made it better. Those are things you just learn through. I know there's times back, you know, probably when I was in middle school that I thought I was building this really great device and I wanted everybody to use it because it'd make life better. And it really just made life way worse. But
what are some of those innovations that, we talked about the waters, but in the kind of the feed, is there anything that you've kind of got in the pipeline, I guess? Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And it runs a lot of stuff. You know, it runs lighting. It's running thermostats for waste oil heaters. It's tracking the levels of oil in the tanks. It's tracking. It's actually connected to all of our cameras, and is tracking like activity. So if there's certain activity in some areas, it might turn a light on. There's so much that's happening behind the scenes that people actually don't see that it's doing. So we just recently installed a bunch of lights down this alleyway, and these lights are pretty far apart, and they're powered from a different power source than this building is, our cattle barn. But if you go up and you flip the light switch for the lean-to lights to turn on the lights on the outside on lean-to, it turns on all these lights down this alleyway, which are not even connected to the building in any way, but it's doing that wirelessly. So it's detecting the state of the light switch in the barn and then reflecting that state on the other lights out there in the alleyway.
That's cool.
And then, so between that and just, I'm doing like, we try to track everything as much as we can out there, whether it be on camera or paper or whatever. Things are being tracked because we have other people's animals there and we want to make sure that they're being taken care of. Everything's being tracked. Sure. So like I have some license plate recognition stuff that's running on some of the cameras. So a vehicle backs into the loading dock or something, like license plate numbers are being recorded into a database.
Especially, I mean, if you've got high dollar cattle there, you know, you're flushing for embryos and doing some ET stuff, it'd be really easy for somebody to slip up there and pick up a $100,000 donor, you know,
or just accidentally think they're loading their animal and it's somebody else's animal. Like, we are very particular about tracking that stuff, and
sure,
and that's why everything is there and it's on camera. Yep,
that's awesome.
We do that and freezer monitoring. So we have a lot of deep freezes. That was actually exactly, that's where I started, was freezer monitoring. We have lots of deep freezes. Mm-hmm. Obviously we store a lot of beef. So every one of those deep freezes gets temperature monitored, the refrigerators temperature monitored. All those automatic waters are tied into Home Assistant. Mm-hmm. We're monitoring system water pressure. I don't even know how many miles of underground water and electric line we have on that place, but it's everywhere. You probably can't stick a shovel in the ground and not hit a water line or a power line somewhere.
That's so crazy.
Monitoring that stuff and knowing if there's a leak. So I've got pressure. I'm monitoring pressure in several different places in our water system and can look for pressure drops and potentially see leaks and stuff that way. Our shop is heated off of waste oil. Mm-hmm. So it used engine oil. It keeps that shop 68 degrees actually, all winter long. Like, it could be 10 degrees outside and it's 68 in the shop. And it's not even that well of an insulated shop, but it does a really good job. Mm-hmm. And one of the biggest things that I've done to that to improve efficiency. So, like, that's an off-the-shelf waste oil heater that you can go buy. Mm-hmm. And what, obviously, you know, heat rises. This is a tall shop. You know, it's an equipment building. I installed a fan, like, in the attic. And I wanted to run this fan to blow that hot air back down to where we were so we could, you know, benefit from that wasted heat up there. And then you run that fan for a long time, and then now you start cooling the shop down. So once you start getting this air moving around in there, mm-hmm. and So what I ended up doing is I installed a temperature sensor in the attic and a temperature sensor down at, you know, chest level. And anytime there's a delta greater than 5 degrees, so if it's 65 down at chest level and it's 70, 75 up there, it turns the fan on, blows that hot air down, and then shuts off. And that's so cool. That's an automated thing that's completely autonomous too. That and plugging in equipment. So we have we have an old 4430 and a skid steer that stays in a lean-to outside. It's not in the heated part of the shop. Mm-hmm. And in the winter, it's keeping that stuff plugged in. Instead of leaving it plugged in all night and all day, it just turns on at about 4 a.m, starts heating the equipment, and then shuts off by 9. So it's probably started in use. Yeah. And I mean, that right there, that probably saves, I'll guess, but I'm willing to bet that that's probably $400 or $500 a year. That may not seem like a lot, but it was also a $2 device that's doing that.
So. Sure. Yeah. Return on investment's pretty good.
Yeah.
I think all of us, all farms and ranches, I mean, we could probably find savings like that if we just knew about it. I think that's one of the biggest hurdles, is this IoT world is just knowing what's out there.
Yeah, it is. That's how I find most of it too, is, you know, I'll be out there working and I'm like, man, I do this all the time. Like, I know I can automate this. And so sure. I'll do some research and find the equipment that I need and do it.
That's awesome.
The automatic waters and the stock tanks were the biggest time wasters, it seemed like. I mean, you're driving to all those different sites. Now, you're driving to these sites anyway to check on your animals, but depending on our stock tank, like it might have been a good far, decent ways away. And whenever we go in and feed or whatever, like it may not be near that stock tank. So just saving you that 20 extra minutes per trip, like when you add that up over time and all the different trips you might have to make in a day, you know, it's several hours a month saved.
Absolutely. If not more. The extra miles on the vehicles. Yeah. I mean, just there's a monetary value to that lot. So we got to talk about the one thing that I want to, guys, I haven't even began, and we're going to put a link down below. But Will, tell us about the turbine lawnmower you have.
Yeah, so alongside of playing with technology, I play a lot with mechanical stuff too. So I'll kind of start this from the beginning. Unfortunately, there's no full scale tractor pulling events here in Oklahoma, mm-hmm. but there's a lot of quarter scale and lawn and garden type tractor stuff. It's cheaper, so it's actually probably better for me. And honestly, that doesn't exist here. But I've been involved in the quarter scale tractor pulling stuff for several years now. And I just can't get involved in the competition part of it. Mm-hmm. I like it. I love it. But I find it more of an engineering challenge to me than going out there and building the exact same thing to the specs that everybody else has. Like, that's not fun to me. I want to build something unique and that the crowd likes. Like, I want it to be a crowd
exhibitionist
pleaser,
so. Right here.
Exactly. Almost all of my, I have one tractor that's by the rule book. The rest of them are all exhibitionists. So I've had electric, I've had this turbine. I've got some little diesel ones that I'm working on. I've got some, another electric one that I'm tinkering with. So I was like, man, it'd be awesome. I've seen some YouTube videos of this other guy that has this little turbine on one. And I got on eBay and started looking around, and jet engines aren't cheap. So
I know.
Unfortunately, they're expensive. But she's going to kill me. But we were at the hospital. So my wife was giving birth. And I'm like, I know I'm not going to be able to spend money for a while. So, I better just hurry up and buy this turbine now. So I'm on eBay. I specifically remember it too. I'm in the elevator going back up to the room, and I'm on eBay, and I'm like,
you're tapping the buy now.
it was a bid too, and there was 10 minutes left. I'm like, so I stayed in the elevator. I just rode in the elevator with other people for no reason, waiting on this clock to time down. And I bought this turbine. It's an APU out of a KC-135 Strato Tanker. So it's like a big Air Force refueler plane. Oh, and the APU, it's a little turbine that sits in the tail and provides heat and hydraulics and electric to the rest of the plane. And this thing was in great shape, and it doesn't look like a jet engine when you look at it. I mean, a turbine engine at all. It's just this big box with a bunch of pipes coming out of it. And by the time, so I got it bought, and I had my cousin go pick it up. It was in Ohio, and he took it home to Indiana, and my dad made a trip up there, and I was like, hey, my cousin has this thing. Can you go pick it up? And it's this giant turbine engine in the back of his truck. So he pulls it home. I get it home. First thing I'm trying to figure out is, how do I start this thing? Like, I don't know that much about turbines. You know, it's my first time playing with one. So the manual is from like 1968 or something like that. So this thing's, it's an old engine. And I found out they took it out because these things are prone to like blowing up.
Oh
so
my God.
They cut its air certification and they built a new engine and retrofitted all these existing planes today with this new engine. So I take this thing out, I take it apart. I'm stripping all the stuff off of it that it doesn't need. I mean, there's the whole thing probably weighs 500 pounds, but the engine itself only weighs 80 pounds. So I'm getting rid of this other 420 pounds worth of junk. So I'm stripping all this stuff off and I'm trying, like, so I start it and I run it. I get it started, I get it running, and then I'm like, okay, well, this and this and this isn't needed. That's for aircraft support or something. So I rip it off. I'll start it, make sure this thing still runs. Still runs. I'll take more stuff off. Start it, see if it still runs. It still runs. I'll take more stuff off. And I get down to the bearings, and I'm like, all right, here's all I need. Now, this was before computers really was a thing. There's this probably 150-pound big electronics cabinet that's basically the equivalent of an ECU today that probably weighs 3 pounds and is the size of a cell phone in a car. This thing is massive. It's, 2 foot tall, probably 3 feet wide, and it's got gauges and switches in it. And inside of it, it's got just full of relays and contactors and transformers and equipment that is in charge of making this engine run. And I'm like, I can't fit all that on this tractor. So I start looking for ways to get rid of all that. So I was able to get rid of all that stuff and condense it to a little microcontroller that's, I don't even know how to explain how big it is. It's about the size of a ketchup packet, this microcontroller is. And that replaced this, 200 pound, whatever it was, computer that basically computer is just a bunch of relays and wires that was running this thing. So I've got this condensed down to a ketchup packet now, and I get this thing started off of that and I'm running it. And so I still at this point did not know what I was going to do with it yet. I just bought it, on a whim.
Yeah.
And so I went and picked up this old Cub Cadet tractor, and this stuff sat in the back of the barn for a while. I've been thinking about it. I didn't know exactly how to do it. You know, this, the power comes out of a shaft. So it's not like a regular jet engine, like you'd see on a plane whenever you go flying a plane, it's thrust, it's air coming out the back of the engine. This has a shaft. So it's an auxiliary power unit that typically ran a generator. And so this generator shaft comes out the side of the engine, but I need it to be perpendicular to that to go into the transmission. So the only other option was turn the entire engine sideways in this tractor. And this, now the exhaust is coming out the side of the tractor and not the front. So it's going to look really goofy and it's going to be really wide instead of long. So I've messed around. I'm like, okay, I need a right angle gearbox that needs to be able to support the 60 horsepower, whatever this engine's rated for. So I'm trying to figure out how to turn this power 90 degrees. And it's I'm over there looking underneath our lawnmower, trying to see okay, well, there's a gearbox right here. This would do it probably. So looking at model numbers on it, I'm calling the manufacturer of this gearbox. I'm like, hey, I need a gearbox. They're like, okay, well, what piece of equipment is there? I'm like, well, it doesn't exist. I just need a gearbox that has a 1-inch input, 1-inch output. I'll machine whatever hubs I need for it. Don't even worry about that. The problem is it needs to support between 6 to 9,000 RPMs. And they're like, well, this gearbox only supports 1500 RPMs. Do you have anything that does? No. Well, do you think it will? And he's like, well, let me talk to my engineer. And his engineer comes back. He's like, we think it will, just not for very long. I was like, all right, that's all I need to know. So
just give us a chance.
I buy this. I'm like, we'll see what happens. So I buy this gearbox and we put it on. Now I'm at the problem of how do you stop and start this? Like, you can start the engine, but there's like, I don't have a clutch like a regular engine would have. So I looked at a lot of different PTO clutches and different types of clutches and ways that I could control this power. I couldn't do it. So I ended up getting a big belt, big rubber belt. I did not expect this to work, and it actually worked really well. And so I'm sticking with this now probably. So anyway, it's a belt drive to a gearbox, which is going into another gearbox, which goes in the transmission. So I finally got this thing sorted out. I put it all together. I got COVID. I was off work for 2 weeks, and I spent my entire 2 weeks with COVID in the shop building this tractor. And I knocked the whole thing out in 2 weeks and took it to a pool the next weekend, and it actually did pretty good. So slowly advancing some things on it.
Watching you actually drive it on, I guess it was, you probably had a GoPro, I'm guessing, or something. Yeah. I watched it from like a spectator's view, and then I watched it from like your helmet view. And it made me nervous just watching it. I'm like, how did Will test this thing out, feel confident with it screaming and making noise like it was, that it wasn't going to blow up?
I wasn't confident. I was so unconfident that I built this big metal shield to go over it because I was afraid it was going to blow up. And I was really nervous taking it there in the first place because that was one of the biggest tractor pulls. That was in Carthage, Missouri. There's two big rows of bleachers that go right down the side of the track, and they're packed sure. to their brim of people. And, you know, I'm like, oh, this is not going to be good. But come apart. So, and I bet I've pulled it. Oh, it's probably had 20 or 25 hooks to the sled, and the only thing I break is the rear axles at this point. So I just keep twisting axles off with it.
That's crazy. Well, we're getting close to time. With our listeners, what kind of, you know, advice would you give them if they're interested in these, applying these things into ag, or what kind of message would you have for our farmers and ranchers?
So I think the biggest thing, and I mentioned this earlier, the biggest eye opener is going to these farm shows. The National Farm Show is the one to go to. It's the biggest one centrally located that it's easy to go to. There's a lot of great technology there. There's things I find there. I will still find things there. I'm going to go in February, and I guarantee you I'll find things there that I didn't know existed. And there's great ideas out there, great products. Mm-hmm. And I find things that I wish I would have thought of. And there's all kinds of great stuff out there. And there's a lot of nice people to talk to. I mean, there's a lot of great people to meet. I've met several people. I bet I've met 4 or 5 people that I still talk to today that I've just ran into out there. And we help each other back and forth on different things. I mean, it's a great community. I think there's something like a 500,000 something people that go through that show. Sure. But it's great.
That's awesome. I want to thank you for spending an hour of your time with us today and shedding some light on, you know, a new area that many, I think a lot of us probably don't even know exists. And
yeah,
but yet it's impacting us daily. So I just want to thank you for taking that time. That's it for today's Your Ag Empire podcast. You can find us across social media at Your Ag Empire. If you feel so inclined, give us a review wherever you're streaming, or visit youragempire.com to visit our show notes, and be good or be good at it.